This is Jay Sekulow. The focus, Israel.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Alongside Egypt and Jordan, with whom we've already made peace, others in the Arab world are moving forward. They recognize that Israel is not their enemy, but their indispensable ally in fighting militant Islam. They view Israel as their partner for ensuring a peace and a future and security and prosperity.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
When I was in Israel, I met with many leading officials, including the Prime Minister. I walked inside the terror tunnels coming from Gaza. I visited the Golan Heights and saw the Hezbollah positions in South Lebanon. One of the most memorable things we did was take a tour of the country by helicopter with one of the top IDF generals. It was eye-opening to see how small the country is and how vulnerable the geography makes it.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. It is unusual that we have our teams from around the globe in one location, but we do. Our offices in New York, our offices in Jerusalem, Washington. So we're Atlanta. So we've got multiple offices represented as we get into a very serious discussion on the situation for Israel.
I want to start with you, David Benjamin, first. You served in the Israeli Defense Forces, still do, in the reserves. You're dealing with international law issues. But the death to America, death to Israel, has been the thematic of these groups in the region. First of all, how serious are they? We just heard, I asked that question, and the response was, we don't have the luxury to not assume they would do this. Looking at the situation today, 40,000 rockets, that was taped a few years ago. Now we're talking about 150,000. What is the situation in the region right now as you see it?
Well, I would say if they don't mean it, why are they making such an effort to create this buildup just about on every frontier that Israel has, particularly in the north now in Syria? In Lebanon, it's not a new story. You have Hezbollah now with an arsenal of in the region of 140,000 rockets, all of them from Iran. You have the Houthi situation in Saudi Arabia now creeping up from the southern front. You have Hamas in Gaza, who are being supported by Iran. If you step back and look at the picture, you can see the circle enclosing around Israel and think, well, why make the effort if they're not being serious about carrying out their threats?
So, which raises the next issue, Rami, and that is the nature of the threat and the Iran factor. Iran has become a major player in the region now, and there's a history to this that a lot of people do not know.
Well, if you come from the intelligence field where I come from, we always have to measure intent and capabilities. And regarding the intent of the Iranians, we just heard death to America, and we hear it from their leaders for many, many years. Regarding the capabilities, they're trying to develop atom bombs in order to rule the world. Now, going back to what David has been saying, the Iranians have been trying to take over the Middle East, get all the way up to the Mediterranean, just like they used to rule that region 2,500 years ago. And when you listen to the Iranians and you look at their actions, the Houthis are Shiites in Yemen that are shooting missiles at Riyadh's airports and are trying to take over Bab al-Mandeb straits in the sea in order to control the oil flow to the west. So when you look at Syria, when you look at Lebanon, when you look at what they're doing with Hamas in the south, you understand that they mean business when they speak about death to America, and they mean business when they speak about death to Israel. When you look at the number of missiles that they have now in Lebanon compared to 2006 they had 15,000 missiles. Today they have 150,000 missiles, many implanted in villages in southern Lebanon inside homes of civilians, targeted at Israel. Unlike 2006, many of the missiles have GPS and are able to hit strategic targets in Israel within few yards.
So we've seen in literally a decade a significant change in the munition capability.
Hayes, we're closing this segment of the broadcast out again. We're in our matching challenge campaign. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a matching gift for. We encourage you to do that at ACLJ.org. Remember, if you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, and a lot of your stations carry it now, just go on over to ACLJ.org. You can catch it there. We'll be back with more in a moment.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
We mentioned this, Jeff, in the beginning. It's death to America, death to Israel. So we have to talk about America's interests in the region, and that's starting with our defense as a country of Israel and why it's strategically important.
Absolutely. I was at a meeting not long ago, within the last year, year and a half, with the Egyptian consul in New York. And it was a meeting of members of Congress and a couple of people from think tanks. And the ambassador, he was pleading with us, saying, why don't you see the threat? He said, why don't you see the threat from the region? It's a threat to your country. It's a threat to your country before any other country. He said, we see it. We know we have Egyptian nationals in this country, and they go to mosques where they're being radicalized. And we know if Iran gets this nuclear deal, which they now have, we will absolutely have to get nuclear weapons. The Saudis will absolutely have to get nuclear weapons. And here's how you know the truth. Israel has had a nuclear capability, you know, the secret that everyone knows, for decades. And there's not been an arms race. There's not been a nuclear race in the Middle East, because they know Israel will not first launch. Israel just wants a defensive capability. But they know that's not true about Iran. So first, you know that Iran will use it. The second thing is, Iran is developing intercontinental ballistic missiles, not to reach Israel, but to reach us in this country.
Let's talk, Mark, about this. Israel's an ally of the United States. But this ongoing conflict, you look at it historically, over the modern time of Israel's existence, the last 70 years, this ongoing conflict has been continuous. And the fact is, sometimes it's different players coming to the forefront. Now it's Iran. But the regional conflict focused on Israel, there's a historic record that is indisputable as to what has happened.
Sure. I mean, Israel, if you just look at the modern era, from 1920, Israel's given this wonderful small area for close settlement of the land in the San Remo Treaty. And then in 1922, the League of Nations sets up a mandate. Israel's finally going to have a place where Jews can come and settle. And then 78% of it is lopped off and given to Transjordan. And you think, all right, fine, the Jews will remain in that last 22%. Then the first plan, the Peel Commission, gives 80% of that they try to give away, and Jews will have 20%. Now, thankfully, that was turned down, but throughout history, at every single point in time, all people have tried to do is cut Israel into smaller and smaller pieces, and eventually the time came in 1948 and again in 67 and again in 73, and we see it again today. They just, you know what, forget anything, let's just wipe them off the map. And yes, the players keep on changing, but unfortunately the ideology behind it has never been about peace.
And there's an interesting dynamic with all this, though, and that is that the United States has a strategic interest, not only in our national defense, but you were mentioning the flow of oil. So that has a worldwide impact. I mean, if you have a loss of the flow of oil coming from the Middle East, you're talking about an economic impact that would be hard to even express. It's not a dollars and cents. It does create war. I mean, it's that important. And this, by the way, this has been known for decades, and this is not anything new.
What is new is what the region is starting to shape like, the look of the region as far as who the players are. So I want to talk about that for a minute. Rami, you said in previous conversations we had, there's been wars. Mark just laid out some of those wars. But then it's always, there's like the war between wars. Explain what you were saying there.
Well, you know, in the last 7 years, the Middle East went through an earthquake. Countries have been turned apart. If you look at what happened in Sudan, if you look at what happened in Egypt, if you look at what happened in even in the Palestinian Authority, a lot of changes. Syria, of course. Israel has to face new type of enemies. The war, the countries became proxies of Iran, and Israel has to face threats from different terrorist groups, and we call it stealth wars. And the reason we're fighting those stealth wars, which is an everyday fight, is to prevent the next war.
So when you're engaging in a stealth war and you're the lawyer advising the military, you face different kind of challenges. So talk about some of those. The other side is not engaging in the laws of armed conflict when they engage. They use civilians as targets. This is part and parcel of how they operate. So what does that put on you as the lawyer?
You've touched on a crucial legal point, because once upon a time, people spoke about the law of war. And the idea was that applies in situations where armies, entire armies, clash against one another. And these situations in between, the war between wars, as Rami has put it, what law actually applies there? And it really took Israel to stick its neck out initially and say, you know, these are also armed conflicts. These are wars just on a lower intensity. We need to apply the same laws. We can't get by, as much of the world has expected in the past, on just applying regular principles, say, of criminal law. The idea that criminals, terrorists are criminals, you have to arrest them, put them on trial. You can't apply that to an organization like Hezbollah, which is a more powerful military than most countries on earth, or even Hamas. So legally, that has been very significant, that the law of war is actually, it's relevant on all different levels of intensity, and including in the war between wars.
So I want to go back to the importance for the United States, for our interests in Israel. Jeff, if I were to say, all right, here's the issue. Why should the United States be defending Israel? What would your answer be?
Well, I think there are multiple answers, and I think that in terms of strategic interest, there is no question that, you know, Israel is the front line in a war that's been going on, maybe that people in America or in Europe aren't really aware of, but people in the Middle East are very well aware of. It is a generational war. They have designs on conquest. And certainly, you know, we saw also the opening of the documentary, America's the Great Satan. You know, it's not just Israel's flags being burned, it's America's flags being burned. Israel is seen as a proxy for America there, because Israel is, in many ways, is representative of freedom, of a liberal Western civilization and culture that they're trying to wipe out. So that's one level. Another level is, you know, America has a view of American exceptionalism. America stands for something great in this world, and Israel stands for that as well. In a certain way, I always say that America is, you know, the greatest country devised by man, and Israel may be the greatest country devised by God. And there's a relationship between these things, and we have a set of values that we're trying to maintain in this country. America is great because it's good. And for America to assert its sense of American exceptionalism, it requires that it stands by Israel just as Israel stands by us. And of course, then there's the last thing, which is the practical, which is you hear this time and again, and I guess Rami and David know this better than I would, but, you know, military in this country reportedly say over and over how much we've gained in terms of intelligence, and also in terms of just on the ground or in the air or in the water, you know, advances for our military and how to fight the battles that ultimately we are fighting around the world.
Yeah, so the battle, though, is also changing, Mark, because we're, and I'm going to just touch on this now, we're going to address it later, and that is it's not just bullets and rockets anymore. We also have the issue of lawfare. And I don't want to get into that conversation yet, but I think it's worth, since we talked a little bit about the legal issues. The legal issues involving the conflicts that are going on in the Middle East right now, to say they're complex, I think, is an understatement.
Sure, and part of the problem is that the enemy has learned how to use the media against Israel very effectively. So to go back a little bit to what you were talking about, the law of war is oftentimes very clear, but the problem is that the media throws around terms that they don't understand, and Hamas, for instance, picked up on that in a very dangerous way. When you conflate terms like disproportionate and asymmetrical, you incentivize terrible things. Disproportionate is an actual legal term. It has a meaning. It's Article 82b4 of the Rome Statute, and it talks about anticipated military advantage and expected civilian casualties.
In other words, if somebody attacks you this way, there's a level upon which you respond.
Sure, and it's a prospective analysis. Yeah. It's a commander in the field saying, making the best decision. There's no Monday morning quarterback. But when you conflate that with the term asymmetrical, how many people died, the technology that was used, what you incentivize is the use of human shields. And Hamas learned that last time and got the media to switch those terms, asymmetrical and disproportionate. And so they stack up their own bodies in order to make it look like Israel has done war crimes.
I want to ask each of you this question, and that is, why Israel is important to you individually? So I'll start, let me start with you.
Okay, for me it's an easy answer because I live there, my family's there. Our family has always been Zionist. My father fought against the Nazis. He was in the British Army. He was wounded at some stage. He was brought to what was then Palestine, hospitalized, and decided then and there this was the thing to do. Eventually, our family, it was inevitable, we landed up in Israel, and that's where we are to stay.
Rami, for you.
Well, you know, my background, I was born in Jerusalem. My mom is a Holocaust survivor. My father is a refugee from Egypt. And I was taught since childhood by my mom that we have to be able to defend ourselves. Never again will we need to be dependent on other people to protect ourselves. So for me, the State of Israel has given me the tools to protect myself, has given my sons the tools to protect themselves, has given me and my sons the ability to give our families security. And as an Israeli diplomat, I've been serving as a diplomat for close to 25 years, I can say that I was very proud to be able to cooperate with different world figures, just like you, Jay, in order to protect the Jewish people, in order to protect the land of Israel.
Well, unlike Rami and David, I live here. I live in America, and this is my country, and I love my country. And yet, Israel is my family. And I love my family.
What about you, Mark?
When I look at the State of Israel, again, I see the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. I see what the rabbis say when they talk about it is the nation that the eyes of God are on it always. And for it to exist, the eyes of God have to be on it always because it's always been at the center of something. And I really think that that is the sort of fulfillment of the biblical prophecy.
You know, there'll be people that say that they don't dispute the right of Israel to exist. But it's not just the right of Israel to exist. It's the right of Israel to exist as a Jewish state. And when I emphasize that when I'm speaking, it becomes very personal for me because in my own family, you've heard a lot of us have had family members that were killed in the Holocaust. And for me, an entire side of my family was killed in the Holocaust. And in our family cemetery in New York, there are 200 names of my relatives that were killed at a concentration camp, or several concentration camps, during the Nazi regime. So the right to Israel to exist is one thing. The right to Israel to exist as a Jewish state is what the real issue and the real battle is all about.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So we got something unique for you today. Our two senior members from our team in our office in Jerusalem are in studio at our media center. Ambassador Rami Levy is with us, and we are talking with him. He is our Director General, and David Benjamin, senior counsel for the ACLJ's office in Jerusalem, expert on international law. We were just actually talking about an international law matter, and I think it's worth getting into it. Stuart Roth is here as well, of course, Jordan and I. And we've got some phone lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110. If you've got a question on Israel, this is a great time to ask it because we got the experts right here in the studio. We are constantly, people have been asking during the break about dealing with the UN and the UN funding money, our taxpayer dollars going to the Palestinian Authority, but then then a special designation by the United Nations, Jordan, $18 million to fight lawfare. In other words, to engage Israel in international tribunals, a direct grant for them to fight us, basically, in court.
That's right. And I think it goes with what Linda has written in on Facebook, and she wrote, I think it's important for the U.S. to stay in the U.N., even if it's for the sole purpose of standing up for Israel. It's the idea that with the U.N. is sending this money, we are providing, of course, about a quarter of the budget of the U.N. And by the way, that's the official amount. Then we fund hundreds of billions in discretionary amounts to the U.N. So when you said that maybe we're paying for a few million dollars, really the U.S. is the reason why the Palestinian Authority gets $18 million. It's not that we're paying for just maybe a few percent, because the U.N. would not have these kind of discretionary funds to use without the billions over the 20% of their funding that we receive. So I think what ultimately people must understand is that it is worth being there, yes, for the Security Council veto. Obviously, that is something you're never going to give up as a superpower in the world. But we can do a lot more, especially with a favorable administration, someone like Nikki Haley at the UN, Ambassador Haley, to rein in and say, you know what, we're not going to fund UNESCO anymore. We're going to pull out of these separate agencies that have done things where we have made threats in the past but not taken action.
Well, I mean, UNESCO basically says the temple site is not a Jewish site, it's a Muslim. I mean, this is absurd. But something David Benjamin said during the break, and you need to understand this, folks, we are constantly, when I mean constantly, there is not a moment that goes by where our office in Jerusalem, in conjunction with our offices here, are not drafting legal documents defending Israel's right to exist. Right now, in fact, we've got three projects that we're working on simultaneously. One on dealing with the International Criminal Court in The Hague and the lack of jurisdiction over Israel. The second, dealing with the Israeli military justice system, so that's called complementarity, so that the ICC has no authority to oversee any of this. Third, there's this whole, you know, the left is trying to bring this, Israel's an apartheid state, so we're having to deal with this. But David, I think it's important for people to understand that the legal work that we're doing out of your office in conjunction with our U.S. office is literally constantly ongoing. And you said the claims we're having to respond to are really absurd.
Some of them are absurd. In fact, you're never prepared to respond to such allegations. Ethnic cleansing is a good example. The Palestinian population over the years since 1948 has only increased several times over. So it should speak for itself that that cannot be. Apartheid, as you know from my accent, I was actually brought up in South Africa before I immigrated to Israel. I can tell you from firsthand experience, there is no connection between what's in going on in Israel and apartheid. And that should be obvious to anybody who's an objective observer. Yeah, we have to deal with these sort of things.
But Stuart, we've been dealing with this for a long time. And when I say, I mean, I was on the phone with our senior counsel, Skip Ash, yesterday, going through three projects. We're responding to a 700-page complaint from the Palestinian Authority that we don't get to see. And that's how it works in these international tribunals. We're responding to something You don't get to see the document you're responding to.
Well, the hostility towards Israel around the world in these international tribunals is unbelievable. And the UN is one of them. The Human Rights Council, which is outrageous, which almost exists for the sole purpose of condemning and passing resolutions against Israel. And we do have to watch our tax dollars. You know, we're all talking about tax reform and what this tax reform proposal is doing for this group or this group. But we all know we're all contributing to the UN. And part of those funds are being contributed to causes that are such that they're against the state of Israel. They're denying the state of Israel its civil and human rights to exist as a nation, as a sovereign nation. And those are things that we need to pay attention to. You know, the UN wouldn't exist without the United States,
right?
Because they tried it before. It was called the League of Nations.
It didn't work out too well.
And it didn't work out too well because the United States was not a party.
Yep.
David, I mean, this goes to the heart of what we're discussing with the funding. From Louisville, Kentucky, is calling in on line three. David, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate all that you do.
Thanks.
I've got a couple questions for you. If the U.S. is going to help fund the U.N.,
yeah,
can we decide to designate where that money goes just a little bit?
You know, first of all, it's a great idea. Here's the problem. When you walk into the UN, let me tell you something. You have no, I'm just being honest with you. Somebody, we've been an NGO at the United Nations for over a decade. You have, and Jordan could address this, no idea where your funds are going.
No, it is.
It's no idea.
It's like you're literally the vast hall. You're going into this vast vault of how does this even work? How do the lights run? How does this operate? The door, who gets an office and where? I mean, it is. Again, it is bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy. I mean, getting a pass, even if you are already have meetings scheduled, I mean, it could take hours or it could take 2 minutes. And again, it's we just had an event with Israel at the United Nations over the summer in New York, at the UN in New York. And literally they knew about 1,000 people were coming. They opened up one magnetometer. And of course, and the Israeli government, which was sponsoring this event, official UN member state, had to push to get another magnetometer so that you could get more people who were standing outside in 90 degrees in New York inside so that the event could start on time. That's the UN in a nutshell. Now, I guarantee you, if this was the Gulf states having a joint meeting and everybody was coming together to celebrate Dubai, every magnetometer would be working. No one would be waiting in line. No pushing and shoving from the UN police. I'm not kidding about that. Pushing and shoving people in suits and ties because of the animus towards, I think, obviously Israel. And by the way, let's not forget, animus towards our, we may be a major funder, but as much as we are, there's a lot of animus towards the United States,
yes,
as well there.
Absolutely. Interesting. Ted Cruz from Texas said he will continue to press all legislative answers, David's question, all legislative options to ensure U.S. taxpayer dollars are not used to implement, facilitate, or carry out discriminatory plans against undermining Israel. But let me tell you what we can't rely on. We don't have the luxury of relying, Rami, on legislative enactments. We have to be aggressive and proactive in the defense of Israel. That's something that you've been talking. We've been talking about this for 20 years. We have to stay at the front lines defending Israel's right to exist.
Exactly. And, in the past 9 years since we opened the office in Jerusalem, the actions of the ACLJ have been received by the Israeli government in a way where there is a need for your work, and we cannot stop doing the aggressive work at the UN, at the ICC, and everywhere else because it's a part of Israel's strength.
All right, we're going to be taking a break. If you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, go over to Facebook. You're there, or ACLJ.org. A lot of ways to get it. Of course, a lot of your stations are carrying it. We're also taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. It's a unique day here in our media center. We've got two of our leading leaders, really, the two leaders of our office in Jerusalem, Rami Levy, Ambassador Levy, and, of course, David Benjamin, who's our senior counsel in our office in Jerusalem. Responding to a complaint by the Palestinian Authority and under the International Criminal Court in The Hague, the Office of the Prosecutor, you don't necessarily get to see the actual document, but respond anyways. All right, we'll take your calls at 1-800-684. I laugh when I say it because it's so absurd, but that's the reality of what we're dealing with. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. 800-684-3110 and ACLJ.org. If you want to participate in that matching challenge campaign, we'll be back with more in just a moment.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
To get into the discussion of where things are right now, we've talked a little bit about Iran and the threat. Stuart Roth, Iran has changed the dynamic in the region. 2,500 years ago, the Persian Empire was exactly that, was an empire, and they were controlling most of Mesopotamia, most of the Middle East. That changed over time, and you had the Ottoman era, and now you have a re-emergence of a Shia state out of Iran.
Well, their whole concept and their desire is to evangelize, so to speak, spread their Shiite form of Islam throughout the entire region. And that's a threat to the Sunni countries, such as Saudi Arabia or Egypt. And so there's this regional gerrymandering going on. And Israel and the Sunni countries have something in common, and that's Iran. And that's fighting the expansion of Iran in the region. But to be sure, Iran is a real threat. And because of this nuclear, what we call deal, which has given them the resources and the pathway to a nuclear weapon, the Sunni nations, specifically Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, are threatened by the existence of Iran and their desire to get nuclear weapons.
But the Sunni-Shia conflict that existed within Islam, so you have two branches of Islam. There's actually more than two branches, but those are the two predominant branches. That is a theological conflict.
It is a theological conflict. And so when you talk about land, backgrounds, individuals, obviously Islam is bigger than just Arabs or Persians. It's spread throughout Africa. It's in our country as well. But if you see the terrorism we've faced here, predominantly come funded out of the Sunni world. But then with a nuclear Iran, that threat, you're talking about, again, the Shia world, which has been a terror threat. Listen, the U.S. has experienced it through the Marine barracks attack in Lebanon. We just oftentimes don't make the... It's kind of, we talk about Islamic terrorism and sometimes don't look past that terminology and realize that there are different kinds of Islamic terrorism. And sometimes those ideologies are opposed to each other. So we've seen the conflict in Syria is actually a perfect example where different terror groups are at war with each other. As you've got these multi-pronged fronts with the Syrian regime, Iranian-backed rebel groups, Saudi Arabian-backed rebel groups, all who would be considered in the U.S., objective terminology as Islamic terrorist groups fighting each other because they all want to evangelize their version of their end time theology of Islam, which they do, this kind of Shia Islam that's taken over Iran under this regime has. It's that kind of theology. And they want to bring it about. And they think the bringing it about is through the destruction of Israel.
So when you look at your neighbors, David, as an Israeli, and Jordan raised Syria, you've got the leadership of Syria being propped up right now by the Russians and the Iranians. Yet you have the Sunnis in the form of ISIS trying to gain a foothold. And you're a lawyer that gives legal advice to the military in Israel, and you've got a border with Syria. What are you facing?
You know, I'd like to quote the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. He said, "My enemy's enemy is my enemy."
Yeah.
I think that so perfectly sums up the situation which is developing in Syria, which is over the years. It's really complicated. It raises all sorts of legal questions about who exactly is the enemy, who's attacking you, who isn't attacking you at any given time. The map can actually change. I'd like to ask a question at this opportunity. Why does Hezbollah even exist? Right? Israel pulled out of South Lebanon, I think, something around the year 2000. What reason do they have to exist? It's only because Iran has been propping them up for what ostensible purpose? Just to fight Israel. That's it. What good do they do to anybody? Excuse me for saying that. course, they've helped out in Syria, but again, just only serving Iranian interests in the region.
In military action, there's this discussion of preemptive strikes, where you take a preemptive move in order to prevent what would be a greater harm. In the legal arena, when you're dealing with this kind of conflict, you also have to take preemptive action. We're taking that preemptive action right now. So we've got a team within the ACLJ, our office in Jerusalem, our offices in Washington, lawyers in New York, around the globe, literally working right now as we speak, as we're coming to you, working on what will be preemptive measures to respond to what inevitably will be an outcry from the well-orchestrated and unfortunately well-organized and with the princes that are backing it up, well-financed opposition to Israel. But make no mistake about it, it's not just Israel that is the target. It is the West. And we're the biggest target, we being the United States, in the West.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. So we've got a unique situation in studio today. We've got two of our leaders from our office in Jerusalem, Ambassador Rami Levy, who's our director general, and David Benjamin, senior counsel for our office in Jerusalem. I wanted to go, and it's a question I'm asking our audience, and we want you to comment on this. How important is it for you, our audience, that the United States supports Israel? We want to hear from you on that. You can call us at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. You can also post your comments on Facebook and Twitter. But again, if you want to talk to us, 800-684-3110. Let me go to Rami, to you on this, because you were Ministry of Tourism, served in the military. You've served in various ambassadorial posts. So you've been a diplomat. How important is the support of the United States and the faith community for Israel?
Well, I want to say that the survival of Israel is dependent on the support of the United States, but also we need to remember that the state of Israel is very important for the United States. If you look at the Middle East region and the stability of Israel as a democratic country and a country that has the same values that the U.S. has, Israel is a kind of an aircraft carrier for the U.S. Israel develops a lot of technology, missile technology, intelligence that it collects that helps the United States as well. So I think the friendship and the bond is forever and important to both countries.
David, from your perspective, what do you look at the biggest geopolitical challenge right now facing the state of Israel? If you were to look at the big, I mean, there's a lot of challenges. What do you think is the biggest geopolitical challenge?
I think in one word, it would be Iran. Iran. And just to back up what Rami said, Israel is at the front line facing Iran. And Iran, just remember, the great Satan is America, not Israel.
Right.
Israel is just a stepping stone on the way. Sure. It's what Iran's doing, an incredibly destabilizing, destructive force in the Middle East.
How present is Iran in the region right now, as far as you what you've been able to determine?
Well, the troubling development of recent months, years, is that Iran is steadily building up its force in Syria. It's importing Shiite militias there. It's bringing people in actually to live there. People criticize Israeli settlements, but actually Iran has been resettling people into that, into these areas to try and to create a dominance. We have a very substantial presence of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards in Syria. This is a major, very troubling development.
Yeah,
and it's one of those issues, you know, as ISIS suffers more and more losses on the battlefield, though we still experience their terror internationally. Iran, though that benefits the United States, it also does benefit Iran and those Revolutionary Guard who are there backing up the Assad government. And that was one of the key issues where the Obama administration, I go back to this, who would not engage. Remember the red line. And it's because they could not get their hands around, okay, but if this, then this, and if not this, then that. Instead of saying, listen, you got to start with one. Okay, we got to get rid of ISIS. That is still being done, but it's almost done. I mean, on the battlefield, there will still be ISIS, I believe, the terror network for probably many years to come. But then the next question is, what happens with, does the U.S. just say, okay, that we've done this in Syria, but now Iran has gone from propping up Assad to, as David said, putting the Revolutionary Guard in place. And then, of course, we saw in Lebanon a prime minister leave because of Iranian influence. And, of course, through Hezbollah has left. Could not govern, was not safe. So you write down, it's Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq right now are being colonized by Iran.
And we've looked at this, Stuart, we've looked at it from our domestic standpoint, out of our offices in Washington and our work in New York, that the Iranian threat, I mean, we've written a book about it, is significant and growing.
Well, absolutely. And I think where Iran's threat is really troubling, and Rami and David could speak to this, is their support for Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is a real threat, much more of a threat than Hamas because of their military capabilities. And now Hezbollah pretty much has an entire country to operate in, and it's called Lebanon. Right. And that's unfortunate because you have Lebanon, you have Syria under the Iranian stranglehold, and they can all import all of this sophisticated military weapons. And of course, Iran now has all the money and resources and ability to create all of these advanced weaponry and go straight into Lebanon, right on the border with Israel.
So, Rami, when you look at that, you and I have been up to that, and you've been there many times, but I've been with you on the northern border with Lebanon. How, following up on what Stuart said, how big of a threat is the situation in Lebanon right now? It's being destabilized, obviously, but how big of a threat is that for Israel?
Well, if you remember, in 2006, when I was still an ambassador for the Israeli government, I called you and told you that we need your help with the State Department and with the President of the United States in order to stop the travel warning.
Yep.
The travel warning was because a few Zilzal missiles, which are able to reach Tel Aviv, were put into, declared actually by Hezbollah, they're going to shoot into Tel Aviv. At the time, Hezbollah had 15,000 missiles. Today, they have 150,000 missiles.
Wow.
Not just missiles.
Well, I want everybody to hear that again. 15,000 10 years ago, basically. 100 and how many now?
150,000 now, but not just missiles. They have GPS systems on some of them, on dozens of them. That means they can hit within a few yards away from a target that they're aiming at. So it could be strategic facilities such as electricity facilities or military bases, etc. The other problem that we're facing is that Hezbollah has put tens of thousands of missiles inside homes in different villages in southern Lebanon. Which, again, we can go back to what we faced in Gaza and talk about the lawfare that they're trying to prevent Israel from hitting this missile.
Yep.
So the threat from Hezbollah is huge. I want to add one more thing about Iran and Yemen. One of the things that we have to understand, Iran's big plan is also to stop the oil from flowing into the West. They're taking over Yemen through the Houthis in order to block Bab al-Mandab port and to stop the oil flowing from Saudi Arabia to the West. So if we look at going back to Lebanon, Israel in the next war will have to face 150,000 missiles targeted at its civilians. I want to share with you one thing that is personal. My father just had a stroke a few weeks ago. What I've done in his home, I had to build a bomb shelter inside the house, a room that became a bomb shelter, because now he cannot. And we know that the next war is going, the cities of Tel Aviv and the major cities in Israel are going to be bombarded.
I want to ask this to David, because some following up what both Jordan and Rami said, and that is Hamas and Hezbollah will utilize civilian homes, schools, and hospitals as rocket launching points. Then if you were to counter that by trying to knock those rocket points out, Israel gets accused of committing a war crime.
Well, my contention is that lawfare begins on the battlefield in that way. It's a win-win tactic for Hamas, Hezbollah. Use civilians as human shields. On the one hand, it's likely to deter attacks. On the other hand, if attacks take place, inevitably they have to take place. Israel has to defend itself. We're talking about a scenario where 1,500 missiles a day fall on Israeli population centers. Israel will have to defend it in a massive and very rapid way. Not sure how much time there will be to even warn civilians in that scenario. Actually, a catastrophe that I hope we will never have to see. And of course, yes, at the end of the day, there's benefit to be had by Hamas, Hezbollah to blame Israel for the civilian casualties.
Yep.
Yeah, one thing I want to add is that a lot of our audience has heard us speak about Hamas, and we've had various different engagements Israel has with Hamas in the Gaza war. But Hezbollah is a different type of enemy, because Hamas had very primitive, and they have very primitive...
Yeah, they were not an army.
Yeah,
not the same extent.
Yes,
yeah.
Missiles and weaponry compared to Hezbollah. Hezbollah has very sophisticated weapons coming in from Iran, a free flow of weaponry, and very sophisticated. So it will be a totally different war, and it will really threaten Israel significantly, all its high population centers.
I mean, Jordan has experienced firsthand, I mean, what it's like when a rocket's coming in. I mean... You've experienced it.
Yeah, you were in a shelter.
We were in a car. Benjamin Netanyahu, you were in a car. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, and that was at a time, again, when the rockets were much smaller. So we know that since that time period, the rocket power, it's not just the amount of rockets, it's the range, it's the impact they can have. They are more sophisticated. They are certainly from Iran. I mean, at one point, these were rockets that, you know, after they had been exploded, you could hold up in your arms. That is not the case anymore, necessarily. I mean, these are now much more long range. Tel Aviv being in range, Jerusalem in range. Those were short range. We were right on the border with the Gaza Strip. So, again, and then you combine what Hamas has to then what Rami's talking about with what Hezbollah has, and you have now the entire state of Israel covered by short range military weapons. So, yes, nuclear is a big long-term threat, but the short-term threat is a nation which has got all these countries and terror groups pointing missiles at them. And we can't really fully ever understand what that is like as Americans, even with the terror that we experience here in our own country.
All right, we're going to be back with your calls in the last segment of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. How important is it to you that the United States stand with Israel? 800-684-3110. Also, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ helps us all over the world. We get a matching gift for it. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
I want to take this final section and talk about what we've done. We've talked about the cases we've litigated. We've talked about the issues. We've talked about the United Nations. The question now is, how important is our position to be vigilant as it relates to the state of Israel? Rami.
Well, I can talk to you as an ex-diplomat for the state of Israel, as a citizen of Israel, and as the CEO of the American Center for Law and Justice in Jerusalem. Since 2002, when we met first, you and the ACLJ have been helping the state of Israel be stronger, defend Israel. I can give an example in 2002 and in 2006, where you personally, Jay, saved the Israeli economy. The Israeli economy was about to be bankrupt because of war, because of the Intifada, then because of the Second Lebanon War. I was called by the ministers in Jerusalem to ask me about the Israel friend in Washington that can help us with the State Department and with the President of the United States. You turned off the travel warning against Israel, which literally saved the Israeli economy, saved jobs for millions of people, saved the trade between Israel and the world, because without what you've done, foreign businessmen would not come to Israel, foreign tourists would not come to Israel, and that's just the first example. Your actions in Israel during the Gaza war in 2008, Operation Cast Lead, helped the Israeli soldiers be able to fight. The actions translate directly to freedom to fight, to freedom to fight against all the, as we call it, the Hollywood actions of the Hamas trying to fool the world. And what you've done at the UN, Jordan and Jay, and of course Stuart, has been a blessing to the state of Israel. I just met Danny Danon, Israel's ambassador to the UN in Jerusalem, when he came with Nikki Haley, the American ambassador. And you should have heard the praise from Danny Danon, the ambassador for Israel, about what ACLJ has done. I can say that every government arm that we've been working with in Israel, David Benjamin and I in Jerusalem, starting with the Prime Minister's office, I personally sat with the Prime Minister a few years ago, discussing the warfare and the lawfare and what you've done. The Ministry of Justice in Israel, whenever there is a need to defend Israel on any front, which is international, they call us, they ask us to have the ACLJ involved. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, same thing. The Legal Department is in touch with us on monthly basis on different projects. Skip Ash comes over many times to help. And if I can say it in one word, the Israeli citizens thank the ACLJ. The Israeli citizens need the ACLJ. You know, many people think it's the beginning of the end of the wars. If you know the Middle East, it's just the end of the beginning. And we have a lot to look for, unfortunately, on the fronts of Lebanon, Syria, Egypt. We will need the help of ACLJ, and we feel very confident that you'll continue.
Well, we couldn't do it without our member support. So those of you that support the work of the ACLJ, we're able to engage these issues. David, we have to engage these issues. I mentioned this on our radio broadcast. We're responding right now to a series of, we've got three major legal projects going on right now, responding to something we're not actually seeing. We know what's basically in it because we know the arguments, but these are not transparent agencies we're dealing with.
You know, there's a huge wide world out there, and I'm not exaggerating, there's this ongoing onslaught on so many fronts against Israel, just in the legal sphere alone, not to mention the public opinion sphere. And it is a wonderful thing, and I'm saying this because I'm aware of what ACLJ is doing, that ACLJ is standing up to this onslaught wherever it happens. Perhaps one of the main focal points today is in the International Criminal Court, where the Palestinians are doing their utmost to try and get Israel or Israelis dragged in front of the court. Many, many other organizations and elements are behind that too. Right. We have no shortage of enemies, and they all realize that this is a place where they might have some chance of success, and ACLJ is right there. And as you say, just recently the Palestinian Authority submitted a 700-page brief to the ICC. They gave it a lot of airtime. They gave a big press conference about it, but we don't know what was in it. So there's no real opportunity to defend oneself against it.
So you defend based on what you think it might be.
What you think it might be.
But again, we've had success. We're committed to continuing it. And that means we have to be vigilant.
Well, Jay, I think for those individuals that follow the work of the ACLJ, I think it's important for them to understand that Israel is one of our priorities. We have attorneys working on matters related to Israel every single day. They're dedicated to the defense of the state of Israel. You know, the War of Independence was in 1948, but we've been battling ever since. I mean, I would love to say that it's over, but it's not over. Every single day we wake up, you open the paper, you open your email, you see the news. Israel is always in the forefront.
And there's also the issue, and I think we have to be clear on this, that and a lot of people do not know this until we do programs like this and documentaries like this. We actually have an office in Jerusalem that is fully functional. With Rami's there, David's there, we've got teams there. It's important to be, I call it the ministry of presence. You got to be on the ground engaging these issues at the forefront. And your support of the ACLJ continues to allow us to do that.
Yeah, and all of our attorneys, you know, can't be on a television broadcast, can't be on a radio show every day. And Rami brought up Skip Ash, one of our senior attorneys. He's been on radio broadcast a number of times from our military standpoint. We have teams like that, but they've got teams also working with them as well. So I think for everybody out there to understand the importance of the actual manpower behind our efforts is important, because we are in the media a lot as commentators, and we have the radio broadcast, and we're speaking on these issues now, but we have whole teams of people where we don't just talk about these issues. We actually live it. We have either we have our staff living it, whether they're reserves in the IDF or veterans of our own military, and in courtrooms as well. So we actually take these issues and live them out every single day. And we know our supporters, that's why they support the ACLJ, so that we can work on those issues, whether they're at home here in the United States or in the state of Israel.
We say in a book that we've just written called Why Does Israel Matter? Why Israel Matters. We just laid out the case. It's for our own interest, the interests of our allies. It's based on the law. It's based on the scriptures. It's based on decency and humanity. The case for Israel.
Wherever this ends up coming, your American Center for Law and Justice is there prepared to take action. Again, your support of the ACLJ allows us to do that. We're in a matching challenge campaign right now at the ACLJ for the month. Your support will make a huge difference. ACLJ.org. It's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to the American Center for Law and Justice, we're getting a matching gift for. So I encourage you right now to become part of the team. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And there are a lot of ways for you to stay engaged with us. Logan's going to let you know how to do that as we close this broadcast out.
That's right. As you said, everything can be found on ACLJ.org. Make sure you follow us on all social medias. That's at Twitter, at Jay Sekulow, Jordan Sekulow, Logan Sekulow, Than Bennett, ACLJ. Like us on Facebook, Jay Sekulow, ACLJ, and all the other pages. You can find us there. Subscribe to the Jay Sekulow Live podcast. Download the ACLJ app, available in the App Store. for Apple devices and in the channel store on Roku.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.